I think we're... Yeah.
We're moving.
Got the numbers moving. That's good.
That's it? No headphones for me?
What kind of operation is this? What kind of rinky-dink? So unprofessional. All right, buddy. You ready?
Yeah. Whenever you want
to. I'm in Nashville with Tommy Goss.
That's true.
Tommy, thank you for having me over today, man.
You're welcome, buddy.
Thank you for having me over all week.
It's been a week.
Tommy Goss, folks. This is a man to thank for the entire Nashville series.
The Nashville series. I am just a fan who put it out there.
You are, this week, you are a producer.
I'll take it.
You've been elevated to producer status, making things happen.
I'll take it.
Facilitating. Let's use that, okay, by the way, for you. Yeah. So that, you know, there you go.
Okay.
There you go. Thank you.
I'm new with this.
I know. Me too. I still make tons of mistakes. Tommy, we met many years ago through the show, and you work with a lot of bands doing tech work.
Yeah.
And I've been saying for a long time, like, I really want to cover this side of things because I think it's really helpful for people, especially guys who... They don't know it. They've never been in that position. And then there's guys who are in that position and they need to hear some things, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of guys around too that play and they tech and, you know, they do both, you know?
Totally. I mean, of course, Tommy is a drummer as well. Exactly. So
I wasn't trying to squeeze that in
there. Yeah. We'll squeeze it in. We do that. Now, let's back up though. How did you even get into that side of it?
All right. It all started... No, after I graduated high school, I moved to New York City, like, right away. I grew up in the Catskills, Catskill Mountains. Went to audio engineering school, the Audio Institute of Audio Research, on University Place in Manhattan. It was a one-year tech school, and I didn't even make it through that. But it was a cool spot. And I knew I wanted to get into, like, the live thing. So I don't even remember how. There was either an ad in the paper or, like, the Village Voice that the Ritz needed stagehands. So I went there, and probably in September of 84, I got a job there as a stagehand. Didn't know what I was doing, you know, 19-year-old kid. But the guy was cool. He said, yeah, come on. And just met a lot of guys, you know. And then the same guy, Mitch, he called when the Ramones needed a guy. And by that time, I could guitar tech pretty well. That was 87. It was New Year's Eve of 86 going into 87. And I worked with the Ramones for 1 year solid, from New Year's Eve to New Year's Eve. And that was it.
And that was what, touring outside the country as well? Did you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was... Yeah, they took me everywhere for the first time. South America, right. Europe.
They're playing big places in South America, yeah?
Yeah, Buenos Aires was a bullfighting ring. You know, dusty, crazy.
like the stadiums, right, in South
America? Later on in their career they did. This was like a bullfighting ring.
That wasn't happening yet. Okay.
No. Okay. I remember it was still way bigger than they were here. They were playing big clubs here.
I was going to say, I remember at the end they were playing Coney Island High in New York City.
Oh, wow. I mean, that must have been just a one-off or something, right?
That was the end. They never played like the Garden or...
No. They would play the Ritz where I started out. They played there...
Right.
But they played this one place in Rhode Island like four times that year when, you know, and it was a tiny little club.
Right.
And that's one, well, we'll get to that too. That's one where Clem Burke played as well when he was...
Right, because you, okay, so when you got in, who was on drums?
Richie was on drums when I first
Richie
got
here. Ramone.
Who, Richie Ramone.
Who replaced Marky Ramone.
Replaced Marky, correct.
Marky.
Marky.
Hey, this is Marky.
You ever hear those?
Hey, this is Marky Ramone.
My son loves to listen to those old Howard Stern interviews where Joey and Marky are just going
talking about the wig and all that.
Yes, they're classic, man. Yeah. So funny. But yeah, Richie was the guy there, and we were talking a little bit yesterday, and whoever your favorite Ramones drummer is who you came in with.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this. I know this is your James Bond theory.
Yes.
I don't know if that's...
For me, it is. Because, you know, I came in and that's the guy I knew. Like, and yeah. I knew of the Ramones before that, but I wasn't a huge fan or anything.
Right.
And to me, you know, they were 10 years, 12 years into their career, and I just thought they were fucking old. Like, ah.
Right.
I mean, they're probably in their mid-30s.
Sure. Yeah.
And, me as a kid, like I was 21, 22.
Like these guys are all fucked. Yeah.
Yeah, they're ancient.
Yeah. So Richie Ramone on drums. You like Richie. That's your favorite to this day, Richie Ramone.
Richie was an athlete, man. He was, you know, he was different from the other guys. You know, he wasn't from Queens. It wasn't that whole, I'm not sure where he's from.
New York guy?
That's what I mean. I'm not sure where he's from, but not that Queens, accent, you know. But he was an athlete, man, and a good dude.
What does that mean, he was an athlete?
The way he played, mm-hmm. it was very athletic.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Was he a slammer?
Yeah, hard hitter.
Okay.
You know, and fast. Like, you know, the story goes that they had to tell him to slow down because, they're contracted to do 90 minutes and they were coming up short. They were, doing like 80 minutes. So he was knocking 10 minutes off the set.
Interesting. Wait, hold on. You came in as a guitar tech? Or
I did. I came in as a guitar tech because their regular guy, Matt, who I'm still in touch with today, his wife was having a baby. So he needed to take a leave of absence. So
you were Johnny's tech?
I was, yep. Johnny had one.
So you were not the drum tech?
Not to start. Okay. I did end up, when Matt finished, my buddy Mitch went off and did something else. I moved over to drums. Matt came back, after, I don't know, 2 months with his, he had his baby and he came back 2 months later.
Okay.
And
So initially you're working directly with Johnny?
Yeah.
So Johnny basically gave you the job? Is that how that works? Like he approves or he doesn't even get involved?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Don't remember. It's just, you met him. And it was basically just two Mosrite guitars, and that's it. There's no pedals. There's no nothing. It's just straight into the Marshall, cranked up to 11, and off you go.
So you were good by then. You could handle that. You could tune the guitar.
I was okay. I mean, I had done two or three tours by that time.
Only two Mosrites. That's all you had? Wow.
That's it.
Wow.
Two Mosrites. Maybe there was a third that we kept in the truck just in case.
Yeah.
But that was it.
And Johnny meant a few words?
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. You're not going to offend anyone.
No, I know he's gone now. But he would just, not taunt you, but he'd just be like, I don't even play guitar at home. Like, I don't have one, I only play when I come out here. He's like, he was so indifferent about the whole thing. You know what I mean?
He didn't warm up before, huh?
No. None of that.
No.
Joey did his thing. You know what I mean?
Vocal exercises.
A little bit, yeah. And, Joey had OCD too, so that was pretty intense because we'd bring boxes of mic stands because he was super tall. So we had to put an extension on the mic stand, tape it all up. You'd have to give it to him before the show. And he'd stand there, a little visual here. He'd stand there and he would just, do his OCD.
He's doing the I mean, yeah, it's an audio, but he's doing the Joey Ramone.
Yeah, and he's working out his stance and then he'd be like, okay, and he'd do two or three of those stands a night, so that when he broke one, you'd just bring the next one out, so they were just ready for him. But he had it for real, because when you follow him, he'd take one step up the step and then step back, one step up, step back, step up, step back, like, so it was a real thing for him. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And that was the first time I ever really encountered anything like that.
And you didn't know what that was. It wasn't called anything, but it was just called look crazy, right?
Yeah.
That's just right. I mean,
yeah, but he was,
guy's a little crazy and that's it.
He was a sweetheart.
Right.
I mean, dude, we can talk about this for the whole thing. Like, there's so many.
What? Just the
Ramones.
Sure. Of course.
You know?
Yeah, of course. All right, so Johnny, as a boss, go ahead.
Man of little words. Wasn't much. Just make sure you're there. They really wanted you to be there, and it was just a two man crew, stage guys. It was just me and the guitar tech. That's it.
Wow, what a small little opera. And who's how are you traveling?
All right, so the band still traveled in the van. Always traveled in the van with Monty, their tour manager, and. the band guy, the backline guys, me and Matt, we drove a 26-foot Penske with the backline in it and a drum riser. And then there was a sound company out of Ohio that would have their own truck for monitors and, you know, whatever else.
Wow. So it was just small operation, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, they knew how to do it. They knew their spot. You know, they would sell 100 t-shirts a night, you know what I mean, at least. So that's where they made all their money, you know. And that's where you go back to Richie. That's where he won a little piece of the pie. And that's why he ended up leaving. You know, 6 months into when I was there. He left in like August, I think, or end of July.
Because he was saying, hey, I want some of this merch money.
Well, yeah. And he, you know, he had been in the band 6 or 7 years. He wrote a semi-hit. Somebody put something in my drink. I think that was him. You know, and they had kind of a hit with that in England, I think. And so, yeah, we were out at a club in Long Island somewhere. And he just came up to me and he was like, hey, man, listen, I'm quitting after tonight. There's going to be a limo out back to pick me up just as soon as the show's done. Just make sure my shit's ready and I'm just going to grab my gear and I'm split.
My gear, his kit?
No, just his clothes, his backstage stuff, his bag, you know, whatever.
A limo?
Yeah, he did that for himself. Yeah.
He treated himself?
Like, yeah. So there's going to be a limo out back. Like,
where was he going? We're back. Do you know where?
I don't even know. He must have lived in New York somewhere.
Huh.
You know?
We were on the island.
Yeah, it was another...
some club.
Yeah, some club in Long Island.
Yeah.
All the time.
You know? Yeah. So did you see that coming? Did you...
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, I wasn't really privy to any of that kind of stuff.
He didn't run out. I mean, they knew, right? The band knew?
No. He quit.
Oh, he left them high and dry.
Yes.
Was it the last show of the tour or anything like that or no? Was there a show the next night?
No, I don't think so.
It wasn't like that.
I don't think so. But maybe they toured, you know, I probably worked 100 shows with them that year. So they probably did 100 shows that year. So it was, you know, you'd work for a couple of weeks, you'd have a week and a half off, and you'd go work for a couple of weeks.
But as you recall, he didn't leave them high and dry like last minute. They had time to find someone, or you don't remember?
No, it was a scramble. It was a scramble for sure. He just left. He didn't. There was no warning, no nothing.
So, what do you remember his reaction from the guys?
I don't. I don't really remember. It was just like, okay, pack it up. You know, like we always did. You know, the show's over. Mm-hmm. Pack it up, and I don't remember what happened. And then next thing, you know, a week later, Clem Burke's in rehearsing with the band.
Mm-hmm. And you're there for that?
Yeah. Set up a drum kit for him.
Where are rehearsals?
In Manhattan at maybe Carol Music. Remember Carol Music?
No, I don't. But
yeah, it was one of those places.
And so, by the way, you liked Richie?
Yes, loved Richie. Yeah, he was a good dude.
Good dude.
Yeah.
And you were his drum tech?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he left. By that time, yeah, Matt was back. I was drum teching.
What was he using? What kit? Do you remember? No memory.
Nah, I'm not a gear guy either.
Okay.
It was probably a set of black... I don't know.
You don't know. Could have been anything.
And the sad thing is, man, I have no pictures with any of those before cell phones and stuff.
Sure,
I have
sure.
No pictures with anybody in the Ramones.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the only... I am listed in Monty's book as one of the techs. Like, he lists everybody in the organization. So that I'm listed in there. So there is proof that this...
This
happened.
And so Clem Burke gets in. You know who he is, of course.
Of course. Love Clem, too.
Yeah. And what was he like?
Nice guy. But super nice that I remember. But his style is completely different than the Ramones style, mm-hmm. the Tommy Ramone thing that mm-hmm. Tommy started, you know. So, I mean, rehearsals seemed to go good. They probably did 2 or 3 rehearsals, you know. And then they did a show up in Rhode Island at one of the places that they always played. I wish I could remember the name of that place. My Father's Place, maybe?
Yeah.
Was that out in Long
Island? I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, it was a tight little club, and, you know, I had to sit behind the amps and just watch him, and... It was just, like I said, he's a fantastic drummer. Go back and look at the early Blondie stuff.
Of course.
From England, the live. Oh, my God. He's just so good. But
yeah.
The Ramones was just not his gig.
What was different?
He didn't... I don't think he had the speed, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, that Richie had brought it to. And like I said, that style, you know, that hi-hat. That,
he just didn't have that thing.
No.
Yeah.
And... And I don't know if he left or they told him, like, this isn't working. He did two shows.
And you were there for both shows?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You, were you thinking at the time when you were there, were you going, this ain't working?
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, you just kind of like, oh.
It's not the same. Something's off. And you knew it was him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Dee Dee was there, by the way. This was Dee Dee Ramone.
Yeah. Yeah. the first, I don't know, we worked on them for like a week. And after that week, we're going to South America, you know. And so the joke is they put me next to Dee Dee on the plane because nobody wants to sit next to him. And, you know, you can't smoke on the plane. He's trying to stay sober. You know, he's in therapy or whatever, doing his thing. And the only thing he's allowed to do is smoke weed. And he's just, you know, you can't smoke on the plane. So I don't know how much hash he ate, you know, to get through the plane ride. But the breath on him, and I'm sitting right next to him. His breath is like nothing I've ever smelled before or since. Just, it had to be from the hash, you know, because he ate so much. And he's talked the whole time. Oof. Right in my face. But again, a sweetheart of a guy, you know.
Yeah.
He was a, you know, he's talking to me about his wife. He wanted to have a baby. And his wife's like, no, we're not going to have a baby. You know, we're not going to do that. And he's like, well, then I asked her, you know, can we just get a puppy? And his wife was Vera. And Vera's like, no, can't have a puppy. You know what I mean? He was just...
childlike.
Yeah, totally. Because, you know, but he was so bummed out. He just wanted a little something. You know what I mean? And, but yeah, that was, you know, that was just a running joke because, you know, that flight's like 10 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
Getting, flying down to Brazil.
Yeah. So yeah, Dee Dee and Joey Moore, just the sweet ones, the very, and Johnny was Johnny.
Like, Johnny was Johnny, you know?
Like no, all business, right? No bullshit. No,
yeah, all business.
No, how you doing?
No, but, you know, once in a while.
Right.
You know, once in a while.
But really just Johnny as you expect.
Like yeah. Just like everybody describes him.
Right.
It's the same.
Right. So you didn't really, weren't necessarily a big fan of Johnny, right? There's nothing to be a big fan of, let's be real, right?
Right, no, it was just, you know.
Like, what are you going to do? Be like, I really like Johnny. Like,
well, no. He was just the boss, you know? He was the boss.
He ran it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the boss.
And so even over Monty, like, would Monty, the manager, be telling everyone what to do? Or sometimes Johnny is the one actually saying it?
It was a well-oiled machine. You know what I mean? By that time,
yeah,
it was 12 years in. They knew what they were doing.
Okay.
You just step in, you do the gig. You
know? And you're doing everything. You're teching for Dee Dee as well, or no?
When I go on that side, it's me taking care of Richie at that point, you know, in the beginning, Dee Dee. And Dee Dee, same thing, two basses and, you know, two SBTs, one on each side of the stage, or two cabinets on his side, one on Johnny's side. And, you know, no effects, no nothing. You just plug it in. And I'd take care of Joey's microphone stand, make sure he was cool with that. And the job would be like after the third song, Joey would take his jacket off. You go, you grab it, but you run backstage and put it back in that fucking, in the vault, because they've had their jacket stolen. So it's just like, you got to make sure they get them back in there.
How many jackets did they have on tour?
One set of spares, that's it. They had the one set that they wore every day, and then there was a set of spares, I believe.
And were the set of spares like broken in or were they new?
Good question.
You don't know?
No, I don't know.
But the ones they wore were all, obviously, do they really wear them every day, even not on stage kind of thing?
Those, no. They stayed in the road case.
So once they got off stage, they go right into the road case.
Yeah.
And they're a little sweaty, no?
Oh, God, man.
They must have been...
Joey would wear his leather pants the whole tour and not take them off. Sleep in them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just imagine that after like 3 weeks.
Well, that's how you break them in, isn't it?
Sweating and crying.
I don't know about you and your leather pants, but when I wear my, that's how I break them in. You sleep, that's the old David Lee Roth. You got to sleep in them. You know what I mean? Like a baseball mitt under the mattress.
Yeah.
There's a way to do it. So that's, you had these sweaty leather jackets, right? That's what you're saying.
Well, they only wore them like the first five songs. You know what I mean? Something like that. And they would take them off and then they'd go into the thing.
Oh, I thought Johnny always, he did take it off. That's right. Yeah, I guess he did. Sleeveless.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the Mighty Mouse t-shirt or one of those.
Right.
I was also the pinhead for a little while. The new guy is Zoe, the pinhead that carries the sign out, the Gabba Gabba Hey sign.
Oh, okay, you know, yeah.
Got to do that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere there's got to be a picture of that. I don't know.
Oh, right. So Clem Burke, Elvis Ramone, right?
Yeah.
He last two shows.
Two shows.
Do they tell you, are they like, yeah, we're making some changes?
Yeah, and to be honest with you.
Hey, Tommy, we're going to let go of Clem.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah. That's pretty good. No, but at that time then, you know, because as the techs, they never sound check, so we would do a tech sound check and I'd play the drums. And so there was actually talk of me like auditioning, like, hey, you know, Tommy can do it. You know what I mean? Why don't we just get him? And for later, that was kind of the impetus of me being like, hey, you know what? Fuck, maybe I can do this. You know what I mean? Maybe I can play. You know, somebody was just a kid from upstate New York and played drums for my whole life, you know?
Which you could, you it would be ironic, you would have had to change your name.
Right, right.
You couldn't be Tommy Ramone. That's that, the irony, yeah.
So anyway, there was that, and then, and all of a sudden, like, oh, Marky's coming back. You know, Marky had been sober for a bunch of years, and I'm sure he heard through the grapevine, even when Richie left, I'm sure he was trying to get in touch with those guys. So then a week later, you know, Marky was back.
Right.
And he came in, and that's, you know, that's why you asked me why Richie was my favorite. Yeah, because he was there, and I saw his style, and that's how I saw the Ramones, and then Marky came in, he was a different drummer. You know what I mean? And you know, it's like, you know, all drummers are different and it's just different styles. They're not really necessarily one better than the other. They're just different.
Yeah, of course.
So Mark was just different. You know what I mean? But he was also, you know, played on a bunch of early records too. So he's got a stamp on there. So not only did Tommy like start that style, Marky made it his own. You know what I mean? And then Richie made it his own. And so my brother keeps telling me I need to write an article or, you know,
right,
a small book, like Heir to the Throne.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm putting it out there. Anybody wants to do that, you can take my idea.
But that's, you saw, but again, like, so Clem couldn't get it, basically. He wasn't right for it. You saw Marky come back, and Marky just fit right back in. It was like...
Yeah, like it never...
Like he knew the stuff, he knew the set.
Yeah, maybe they rehearsed a couple of times, and then boom, right, he was out.
You know, off and running.
Yep.
Yeah, and and just back on the road doing the crazy... amount of shows, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole thing, you were saying, I asked you once about, like, it's true, like, all they ate was pizza and Yoo-Hoo backstage, that was it?
Every night, it wasn't a gimmick.
Every night, pizza and Yoo-Hoo.
Pizza and Yoo-Hoo, that's it.
And where, this is wherever they were.
Yeah, and like in South America, it was tough. They, like, find some chocolate milk, whatever it was, you know what I mean? Just get some chocolate milk and some pizzas.
And they're all drinking Yoo-Hoo, the whole band?
Pretty much. I mean, there were other drinks back there too.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I'm straining to think if there was like even a deli tray with some vegetables on it. You know what I mean? I don't think there was. It was just like...
But everywhere you went, it was also pizza.
Mm-hmm. Like four pizzas and fucking... and Yoo-Hoo.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. Are they rooming together too? Are they cutting those costs or they each
get... No.
They each got their own room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I heard things like after a show, like they had to stop at a place where Johnny could get his milk and cookies, but you don't remember that.
No, because we never traveled with the band.
So it's possible you just weren't there.
Yeah, yeah, I just wasn't there. Like we pack up our truck and, you know, back to the tech side, that's where I learned. Me and this guy, Matt, were perfect because we knew it would take us a half an hour. Break down the stage, get it all in the truck, and then we'd party.
Right.
You know what I mean? And we had it down, man. And it's, he and I just like, we clicked so well. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you never know when you're going to get on a crew, how it's going to go. And it, like I said, this is a two-man crew, so.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Did you party with Dee Dee, by the way?
No. He only smoked weed, and I don't smoke weed.
Oh, so he was sober from everything else the time you were there.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I hung out with Joey. Like, every once in a while, you'd have to go babysit Joey. And like, all right, it's your turn to go out with Joey tonight. Like, oh.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But I never did drugs with him or anything like that. He never showed me that side.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Or anything. And
Johnny was already with Linda Ramone at that point?
I guess, yeah. Because that was the point, too. They didn't speak, yeah. Johnny and Joey.
You saw that. I mean, you witnessed that yourself. You saw that. You never saw them speak.
Nope. Nope.
Wow. Never.
Even in the van. To my knowledge, you know, they, you know, driving from city to city, they didn't speak at all.
They just wouldn't look at each other and talk. And
yeah, sunglasses on. Joey would keep his sunglasses on. And, you know, backstage, they'd have to share the dressing room and what have you.
Sure.
They just, you know.
Were there any kind of cliques going on in that band? Was there anyone who was like this sort of, I mean, was Dee Dee talking to everyone?
Yeah, you know, everybody else was cool. It was just Johnny and Joey just didn't speak.
Right.
At all.
Were any two of them buds or not really? It was like.
Richie and Joey, you know, for sure, because Richie still drank, and Johnny really didn't drink either. Johnny didn't party at all. So right. Joey and Richie, like in South America, we were sitting at me, Richie, and Joey sitting at a restaurant outdoors eating, and those two dead serious were like, "Let's bolt. Let's not pay. Let's bolt." Yo, for the fun
dine and dash.
Yeah, for the fun of it. Just and here's me, you know what I mean? And this is like, you know, the first I'm only working for them for a couple of weeks. You know.
This is bold.
Yeah. I'm like, fellas. It's
so punk rock, you gotta love it.
Don't leave me here.
Yeah. I love it. So it didn't happen.
No. We're talking about
it. Let's bolt.
Yeah.
So Marky comes back. You're doing that for a while. What's he like to work for? Is the
nice enough? Yeah, he was nice enough.
Nice enough. Bit of a dick. I mean, what is he? What is he gonna do? Come on, he's not gonna.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I hate to say bad things about people, but he wasn't. He wasn't a bad guy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
he was
right.
Just, you know,
he wasn't quite up to par. Richie was cool.
Yeah. And one more, but you know, he was getting his gig back too. You know, he's probably taking it very seriously and was like, "Hey, I've been sober. You know, and I want this." And you know, he stayed for the rest of the time. You know, that was his gig for the rest of the right. run for the band.
Right.
You know, so the only pet peeve I have is that he wrote a book, and I have the book, and there's a picture of me and him and Ginger Baker together, and it's like it just says me and Ginger Baker. It's like, come on, you know, it's my old tech, Tom Goss, too. You know, Tommy Goss. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I got nothing.
Yeah, Marky.
Marky. But, you know, that's just, you know, like, oh, it would have been nice to get mentioned in the, you know.
You're going
to
talk about my wig? Did you put the wig in the road case after the show?
Never saw that. Never saw a wig come on or off.
Do you think it's a wig?
I think later on it was. Maybe not. That was 87.
So not at this point. You think at that point it was real hair?
I don't know. Because, yeah, that was the Stern days, too. And Joey was busting his balls about the wig and those.
But you never saw anything or reason to believe it was?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. I mean, Howard Stern's got a freaking wig. But never mind, you know. He's got it. Come on. Was he, like, he's 75 or something? And he still, like, insists he doesn't have gray hair? And,
I don't know.
Like, he's really, like, dude, at least dye it gray. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like Clem Burke.
Right.
Like, it's bizarre to see pictures of him on Instagram when he's like, it's like, dude, that's not your hair color, bro.
Right.
Like, bro, how old is Clem Burke?
Yeah.
70?
70s, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, like, look, I got brown hair. Like, look at me, you know? Like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Come on. You know what I mean? This is a note for everyone else, by the way.
Wow.
Like, you rock and roll. Yeah, Tommy's got a nice head of silver hair. He's
as
a silver fox.
See,
but what I'm saying is, like, this is a note for the guys listening. Like, come on, guys. Like, you know.
Yeah.
This ain't the, you know, with the dyeing the hair.
Yeah.
Or dyeing your beard. Like, what are you, Mike Baird?
Right. No, I love it now that Steve Lukather, like, lets his hair go now. It looks so much better.
That's right.
He's got a big, bushy head of white hair.
That's what I'm saying. Just embrace it.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding, you know? All right, so that happens. So what? It winds down. Why? Like, what happens?
It winds down at the end of that year because, you know, those guys, they were just three, you know, knuckleheads from Queens. You know, four of them. You know what I mean? And like I said, when they toyed with the idea of maybe me playing, I was like, wow, maybe I can play. Because I'm from upstate New York, super low self-esteem. You know what I mean? And plus, yeah, I'm in New York City, the biggest city in the world. I can't play here. You know what I mean? So after that, towards the end of that year, I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I want to play. You know what I mean? I was 22, 23 about this time. And I had been playing forever, but never played in cover bands. Where I grew up, there was nobody around. It was just me playing the drums by myself. So I saved up my money at the end of that tour, bought my first kit. It was like a red set of Yamaha Tour Customs, I think. And I started a band with my brother, you know.
So that was, you just figured, like, I'm done with the Ramones, I'm going to go do my...
Yeah, and it was perfect, because one year, I worked New Year's Eve to New Year's Eve, I was like, you know what, I'm finished, I'm going to,
right.
You know. And my younger brother was getting, he was probably 16 or 17 at the time, and he was starting to get good at the guitar, so and I took a break. You know, I went, I probably lost my apartment. Actually, I gave up my apartment because...
Where was it?
I lived all over. At that point, I lived in Jersey City.
Oh, okay.
You know, me and a couple of buddies from the Institute of Audio Research got, you know, we got a, they had brand new townhouses over there. So it was like $1,175 a month for a three bedroom, and we were like living large. But I was on the road so much, I finally just, you know, I was like, listen, guys, I'm going to just, and so I would stay home and I would just drive the Ramones gear truck home. And did I tell you this story? One time we put on a show in front of my mom's house, and I used all the Ramones gear. We just set up the Marshall, set up the drum kit, the drum riser.
Nice.
Like, yeah, I never really told anybody that. There's probably video of that somewhere.
Nice.
That was like, that was my punk rock moment. Hey,
perks of the job, man.
Yeah. You know, I had the truck. We're sitting in my mom's driveway. We're like, let's put on a show.
Fucking, I love it. I love it. All right, so you made your run for it. You had a band, but like, what, you ended up back in tech.
Yeah, well, I mean, and after that, like a year and a half after I left the Ramones, I started playing drums for Jack Bruce. Like,
oh,
amazingly enough, because we had a band called, that was the Warm Jets back then. It was me and my two brothers. And it was just an improvisational noise band, whatever. And we had this one management people looking at us, and Epic Records was kind of checking us out. And Jack Bruce was on Epic at the time. And this was 89. And we had put out a single on Bob Mould's label, The Warm Jets. And, you know, just making cassettes, doing, you know, short tours. It was a DIY thing, you know what I mean? And then towards the end of 89, that was kind of breaking up or whatever. But Epic was looking at us. And then in 89, Jack and Ginger were going to do their first tour together in 20 years. They hadn't played since 69. So on the way to New York for rehearsals, Ginger's appendix burst on the plane. So the plane had to turn around, go back to California. So meanwhile, the rest of the band is in New York, and I got a call from the guy from Epic Records. Hey, man, can you just go and sit in for rehearsals while Ginger gets his appendectomy? I had one night to learn Cream songs. And he sent me Jack's new solo record. So I just, you know, charted out what I could and showed up the next day. And I think I did two rehearsals with them.
Oh, it was just rehearsals?
Just rehearsals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay, you did that. That was fun. That was good. I mean,
it was great. You know, and Jack would just, you know, he'd start a song. You know, he'd play half of it. He's like, yeah, that's good. We know that one. You know, okay. And I'm just there for rehearsals. Mm-hmm. No biggie. Thank you very much. But it's Gary Mudbone Cooper singing background vocals and playing a little percussion. Blue Saraceno on guitar.
Oh, that's right. The Blue Saraceno years.
Yeah. Bernie Worrell, you know, on keys from Parliament. And mm-hmm. So Mudbone was from Parliament as well. And James Brown.
What'd you think of Blue Saraceno?
I mean, dude, he was like, he was 18. I was 24, you know, so we had to room together. Well, we'll get to that. Because I did end up touring. I did end up doing the tour.
You're confusing me. You said it was only rehearsals. Let's move it along. Yeah.
All right, move it along.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ginger comes back, right? And they go right to the first show.
Okay.
Ginger never learned any of Jack's solo material.
Okay.
None of it.
Okay.
Big fight. Ginger leaves.
So he pulls out songs and he's just like bluffing it? Okay.
Bluffing it.
How did it sound to you?
I wasn't there. They go right to first show.
That's right. You weren't teching.
Couple rehearsals. No, it wasn't teching or anything.
I got it. So you get a call from...
I get a call. Hey, can you join the tour? You'll do a set of Jack solo material. Ginger will come out second set and do a Cream set.
Whoa.
What are they going to do? The tour's booked. You know, Ginger took off like, fuck this. I'm not doing this. You know?
But he was. He was there.
He was for the first night. But it was so bad.
No, you're confusing me. Because you're saying that he's going to be there to do the second set.
Well, this is what they call me. Like, hey, Ginger quit, can you come up
yeah.
to Poughkeepsie, to okay. my hometown
okay.
gig?
Yeah.
You know, that's where I saw a billion shows. So I show up.
Okay.
Right? With my kit in
yeah.
tow.
Yeah.
We set up. And granted, this is two rehearsals where we never even really finished a song. Ginger's not there.
Okay.
First show was in D.C., I think. And it's just, it was a disaster. You know, Ginger quits. But we set up, but they're hoping Ginger shows up. You know what I mean? We set yeah. up. I do like a set with them. And as my brother reminds me quite often, there were cheers of Tom Goss sucks in the crowd because they're expecting Ginger Baker. Mm-hmm. And they're like, who the fuck is this kid? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. who is this guy? You know, and that wasn't great either. I did okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So Ginger finally shows up, and his tech is still a good buddy of mine. Ginger finally shows up at like 1:30 in the morning. The crowd waits, like half of the crowd's gone. They do the set, but that's how it turns out.
Okay. And he has his own kit with him, with his own tech?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you tear down and they set up?
Like yeah. And Jock, who's a good buddy of mine, he lives in Scotland now. You know, I was like, dude, don't worry about me. You take care of Ginger. I'm a tech. I can mm-hmm. take care of my own shit. You know what I mean? And that's the way the tour rolled.
So that continued like that?
Yeah.
You all were out together. You're playing a first set with Jack Bruce, Blue Saraceno, and Bernie Worrell?
Bernie Worrell, Gary Cooper, you know.
And you're doing the first set of Jack Bruce songs.
Yeah, mostly Jack solo stuff, which was really super great.
And no, some Cream? Or?
Yeah, a couple of Born Under a Bad Sign, I think I played, which was a cover anyway.
But out of curiosity, why wouldn't you do that with Ginger?
Ginger didn't learn his solo album.
No, you said you even played some Cream, though.
Right. Well, he would just slip a couple in with me. Oh, okay. And then they, you know, they had plenty to choose from with Ginger.
Okay, so you would do that first set. How long would that be, like 45 minutes?
No, an hour. Hour
and
10.
And then like a little break.
Yeah, they take a little break.
And then do a second set with Ginger.
Yeah.
All Cream.
Yeah, all Cream.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was insane.
And you did an entire tour like this?
Yeah, two runs across the States.
And who are you traveling with?
Tour bus, you know, this tour manager and a couple of techs, and the band is on the bus with Jack. But Ginger, because he smoked a pipe, nobody would let him on the bus, so he drove a car the whole tour. And one of the techs would drive with him. And
did he mostly drive himself? Or
Yeah. He just drove around, smoked his pipe. And these guys, you know, I'm 24. They're probably in their mid-40s, maybe hitting 50. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're younger than I am now.
right.
You know what I mean? Right. But Ginger looked ancient at that time, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Did you get to know him?
He was, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks in, I finally, you know, got up the gumption to go up to him. And I said, hey, thanks for having me out here, man. Just, you know, wow, what can I say? You know what I mean? And he was just like, well, I'm glad you're here. I never wanted to play that shit anyway. So I was like, all right, right on.
So he was okay with it. He didn't mind that there was a first set with a different drummer. It didn't bother him at all.
No.
Like, I don't want to play that shit.
So. No, didn't want to play it.
And, interesting.
You know, you saw the documentary. He's an ornery,
you know, ornery bastard, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, that's why we love him.
Yeah, but he was super nice to me. Always very, very nice to me.
I gotcha.
And, you know, the best part of the tour is the tour manager's like, hey, you should drive with Ginger one day. Take a ride with him. You know what I mean? I think it's time.
Right.
So we're driving from Chicago up to like Wisconsin or something like that. And it's 3 p.m. Ginger looks over. It's time for a cup of tea. Pull into a bar, like a regular, just a bar. We sit at the bar. We order 2 cups of tea. You know what I mean? We're just sitting there sipping and the bartender comes over, some, you know, lady. What do you boys do? Ginger looks up. We're drummers. Done. I'm out. I could go home now. I can bury myself. Like sitting with Ginger Baker, and you know, we're drummers. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That was badass.
Yeah.
But then to get grounded that night, Bunny Carlos is at the gig. And I grew up playing to, you know, John Bonham and Dream Police and Bunny Carlos. I go up to Bun, like, man, I'm a huge fan. I just, you know, that was me. I played that first set, you know, big fan, played to your records as a kid. You know, I'm still a kid. He just gives me a little nod, just walks away. Doesn't say anything to me.
Oh, the Robbie Robertson, I call it. That's what he did to me.
You know, so I had that big...
I put my hand out to Robbie Robertson. He looked at it and walked away.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, so I had that high at the bar with Ginger. And that night, you know, Bunny's just like...
Bunny.
Yeah, you know, later, kid.
Later, kid. I got to go buy some Ludwigs.
But...
I see a citrus mod in the corner. I got to go.
So, yeah, that was, you know, it was like a 2-month tour. We did, went up to Christmas, then we had a Christmas break, and then we did another month, you know, and right. Those two would, you know, they butt heads the whole time.
You saw some fights?
Oh, yeah.
And how does that work? Is Ginger screaming at Jack? How does it work?
Just screaming back and forth, you know, they're up there. And
is it like you fucking, is it like a lot of that going on?
This is a quote, and you can quote me on this. Yeah. You couldn't keep fucking time if you're a fucking clock, you old cunt.
Which one said that? I don't even know.
That was Jack to Ginger.
Okay.
You couldn't keep time if you were a fucking clocky old cunt.
Love it. Like,
oh, God.
Love it.
But that was just kind of their thing. You know?
Was there ever any love that you saw?
Yes. You know.
You did see that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You saw some affection?
But they could get at it, man. They could just...
Sure. Like brothers.
Yeah. Like,
you know, well, I shouldn't say that.
Old bandmates. You know
right.
what I mean? Just,
right.
Just old stuff coming up.
Right, right.
But, yeah, then that was it.
Were you ever in a bar or anything during setup and then Eric Clapton came on the sound system or anything like that? You ever witnessed that?
No.
Okay. No. So what year would that have been, by the way?
This is 89 and 90. It was the end of 89 and the beginning of 90 at that time.
I can be your forever man. Right? Wouldn't that have been around that time?
But I tell you, every night, you know... The clubs for publicity to sell more tickets too. It was like, oh, Clapton might show up. You know what I mean?
That's what people really thought.
Yeah, oh yeah. That, you know, at some point on the tour, he was going to show up.
Oh, those poor bastards.
Yeah, never happened.
Of course it wasn't. Eric was going to show up.
It's right. Like, yeah, we're playing medium-sized clubs, maybe a few theaters, you know, 1,000 theaters sometimes.
And Blue Saraceno, you didn't get to know?
No, we did. We roomed together.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
Yeah, and... again, a nice kid, but he was a kid and I was a kid too. And at that time I was partying, you know, drinking.
And he didn't party. Yeah.
No, he was still a kid. And, you know, he played guitar in the room all night. So I'm trying to sleep and right. You know, one of those guys.
Right.
And then one night, you know, I woke up to him playing Smoke on the Water. And that was kind of I was like, dude, come on, man. Smoke on the Water. It's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Smoke on the Water, bro.
Yeah. And you know, there's no amplifier or anything. It's just him strumming, sitting in his bed. But still, you know, when you're trying to sleep.
He had that in his head. He had to go with it. He had to follow that one. Smoke on the Water.
No, but you know, we were just kids. And he didn't party at all. So I was partying and, you know.
I remember a couple years ago, I actually looked into him because I was thought of him. And I went, what happened to that guy? I think he does like soundtrack stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I follow him on the socials. He doesn't post much, but...
But he's, right? He's like a soundtrack kind of guy, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Blue Saraceno.
Yeah, like he was in Poison for a minute.
Oh, he was one of the guys in Poison?
Yeah, I think he, like, you know, he did a couple of those hotshot guitar things.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Okay.
For a little bit, like in the late 80s, you know, or early 90s.
I'll have to get Blue Saraceno on the show.
Indrizzo knows him. Victor knows him because
he does.
Yeah, so you might have it in there because their kids went to school together out in L.A.
Oh, this is good. I see. I love it. The couple of guineas like me, Indrizzo Saraceno. I love it.
Yeah. So
go ahead. So all right. So that happened. That tour.
That happened, and then like you know, right after that, I did another tour with the guy from the Bongos who was my first tech gig. He called me up and said, "Hey, you want to play drums on my tour?" So I did that. We toured Europe, toured the States, made his next record. Jack was going to make a record with that band. He was like, you know, oh yeah, let's make a record. And, you know, but he got dropped by Epic like right after that. So that was it. And, you know, I didn't see Jack for 20 something years, you know, but I finally got to see him. He was playing with that gig with John Medeski, Cindy Blackman, and Vern Reed. They were doing...
Damn.
Yeah. So I went down to the Blue Note and I passed Cindy a note when she was on her way up to the dressing room, and she stopped and she's like, what's this? And I said, I used to play for Jack. Just give him a note. Tell him I was here. you know, just tell him I said hello. And she was so nice. She was like, wait a second. Hold on. Wait right here. I'll tell him you're here. And so she ran upstairs to the dressing room and came back down. I sat and talked to Jack for like 20 minutes, you know, which was awesome. You know, I hadn't seen him since then. And, you know, he was like, oh, that's right. He was like, that's right. You did that because Ginger. And he says, you know, Ginger just called me the other day. He must be out of money. Like, to maybe do something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, and then Jack, you know, unfortunately passed away a couple of years after that. You know, maybe a year and a half, 2 years after that. Yeah. But I got to see him again and say thank you and all that. So it was really nice. But where were we before that?
What's next? Yeah, like more what's
oh,
next?
I toured with this guy. I made a record with him. Richard Rome. And then after that was done, I decided to start another band with my younger brother. We started another band, another DIY thing, put out a couple of records on our own, you know, made an indie record with another thing, and, you know, tried to navigate that world. And, you know, and I had a rough time playing with anybody else because, like I was telling you before, and we've spoken about therapy and all that stuff. I have really super low self-esteem. You know what I mean? I wasn't one of those guys to go out in the city and just start meeting people and hey, I could play for you and I could play. It was just, you know, so my brother and I had a band and we did that for a few years. And then, you know, I did some records for people in the 90s, a band called Grand Mall, St. Johnny, they were on Geffen, you know, just the regular stuff, you know, you're in and out, you're doing waiter jobs, you know, working for a moving company, you know, you tour for 2 months and then you come home for 2 months, you know. And then I started having kids, so I just kind of stopped that.
But you got back into the tech then?
Yeah, that was like in the, moved back upstate. And played with some regional bands up there. Did some little bit of touring up there. Made some records. Built a little studio. But back in 2012, when the when the economy kind of tanked from 8 and 9, you know, from the housing thing, and I had a business of my own that was just, you know, nobody was spending money. I was, you know, just broke. So I called up some old guys in the business and said, "Hey, man, I'm looking for work. You know, if you can get me back out there." And that was 2012. I got in with Richie Sambora. Sambora was out of Bon Jovi or just, you know, going to do a solo tour or whatever. I don't know if he was out of the band yet or not. And the reason I got that gig is because my buddy was like, oh, yeah, he used to, you know, he hung out with Ginger Baker. So they all wanted to meet me and find out because just about Ginger Baker. That was really the only reason why I got the gig because I hadn't, you know, teched in a long time. And that was the gig where I met Aaron Sterling, great drummer, of course, been on your show.
Aaron was playing with Richie Sambora.
Yeah, he did the new solo record.
What year was this?
2012.
Okay.
2012, the record had just came, I think, Stranger in This Town? Or...
That's interesting, because that's the year I started the podcast.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So...
I didn't realize Aaron was doing the Sambora gig that year.
And he didn't, you know, before.
He's come a long way in that time, man.
He really didn't tour back then. You know what I mean? Like, I think the Sambora tour was like one of his first, like, because it was Richie. And, you know, the producer Luke had asked him to do it, I guess. And it was short tour. It was like 2 or 3 weeks, you know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
It wasn't like major touring.
Right. So, but you were Aaron's tech.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was that like?
I mean, you know him. Great guy. And we've spoke a little bit about this before. Just one of those guys, and, you know, four-piece kit, you know, or you know, one up, two down, you know, and just like, do your thing, man. Like, you tune them up however you think is good. You just make them sound good.
Just easy going.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Just rehearsals are great.
Yep.
And I think we did a little bit in the States, but it was mainly Europe. We went to Europe, and we did that. And, so that was cool. And then we did it again in 14. I got a call.
With Richie, you mean?
Richie came back.
And you like working with Richie Sambora.
Nice guy. Very cool guy. Very, very sweet. You know, but total rock star. That guy's a rock star. You know what I mean?
In what way? Go ahead.
He's got the tour manager and everything, that, and he's just taken care of. You know what I mean? He's, you know, when Dolly was playing the other side of England, he rented a helicopter and just, I'm going to go see Dolly. You know, he flies over to see Dolly and sits in with Dolly.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he was, you know, he had the crew in the same hotels as the, you know, as the band, like these five-star hotels. And they were just super expensive. And the, you know, the breakfast buffet was $50, you know. We were at the Mandarin in London, you know. And so Takumi, his tech, was like, hey, man, you know, we can't afford this. The tech guys can't afford this. And which is like, just tell him to put it on my room. Don't worry about it. It's charged to my room. You know, he wanted everybody to be together, you know, so that kind of sweet, you know.
Wow.
And I told you, I brought my son's pick guard for him to sign and you know, like during rehearsals, and I forgot about it. But he remembered. He came back to me and was like, hey, man, where's that pick guard? Let me sign that for you. You know, so that kind of a sweetheart kind of guy.
Yeah, he's a good another. Yeah. The Italian from
Jersey guy. Yeah,
totally.
But then in a 2014 tour, that's when I met Indrizzo. And Drizzo came in to sub for Aaron, because Aaron had something previous. Aaron did, I can't remember how it went, but he did some of the tour, and then Victor came in to Europe to do the European dates. And, you know, he came in, and you know him, he's just such a sweetheart, and he was going through some stuff or whatever. He just, you know, he wears it on his sleeve. He just kind of laid it all out for him. I'm like, all right, buddy, I'm going to take care of you.
Yeah.
You know? But it was great to see, because Aaron had done the record and the tour, to watch the way he ran the gig, you know, behind the drum seat, and then the way Victor came in. You know what I mean? Because Victor, one rehearsal, you know, that was it. One rehearsal and, you know, completely different drummers. But it was great to see. You know, it was really cool to watch how they both handled that, you know, that thing.
Because like it was different, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, because, you know, Victor's going by the record. He's going by the album. So I remember him starting off one song, and I'm sitting on the side like, oh, man, this is too slow. It's kind of fucked up. You know what I mean? I get a little nervous. Not nervous for him, but I'm just a tech. But anyway, so but, you know, he fucking killed it. You know what I mean? His groove is just different than Aaron's. And it was just like, man, at the end of the song, you're like, fuck yeah. That was fucking great. You know what I mean? But, you know, like I said, two different guys. The way they, you know, push the band, pull the band, you know, because there was a lot of jamming in that band too. It wasn't like set, you know, there was a lot of jamming in there too, because Richie would just go off and do his thing.
Right.
So, yeah, and that was it. And then I've been teching a bunch ever since, you know, and just taking what I can. I'm like a sub. Like, I don't like to go out for too long. I got another gig that I do, AV. But I've worked with, like, Alanis Morissette. Like, Victor brought me into Alanis. You know, I did a couple of tours, small tours, a couple of weeks with them. This Spanish guy, Luis Miguel, did a little Social Distortion.
Who was on drums?
For Social D? Hidalgo, Dave.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, and another super sweet guy.
Yeah.
He's setting up his drums, changing the heads. I'm like, dude, I'm here. This is my job. It's like, don't worry about it. And I was doubling up on that one, too. I doubled up a lot, you know, because bands are always looking to save money. So I think I did Johnny Two Bags and Dave. You know, I took care of Johnny.
Yeah, Dave's great. No, Dave's been on the show.
Yeah, I think I sent
you his number. That's right.
I think I get a shout out on that.
Correct, Tommy Goss. That's right. You did hook that up, because he was in the mobile recording unit. It's all coming back to me. That was in the Hollywood Bowl parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when I was out on tour with a couple summers ago with Bush, The Cult, and Stone Temple Pilots, I reached out to you. I asked Tempesta. I said, hey, can I give you a number to Dave? And
that's right.
Yeah.
Tempesta.
I tried to get Eric Kretz, but the SDP camp was pretty self-contained. I never really met him. But I have worked for him since, and will again in October. They asked me to do like a one-off in Tijuana.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Going
out with STP.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Maybe you can talk to Eric Kretz.
I will.
Yeah.
You know, he seemed like a very nice, I only did one show with them. You know, I did a one-off in Boise, Idaho or something like that.
We got to get into the GMS thing.
So yeah, that's about it, man. Just, you know, I'm hustling. I'm here in Nashville now. I'm building a little drum studio for myself and trying to play locally. And, you know, if gigs come up, like Tekken, I'll take those too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm starting to get a little footing here in town to play a little bit.
So. Yeah, you're playing. You are.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all good, man. Loving life.
I mean, look, again, folks, I mean, I'm going to reiterate. I mean, this couldn't have happened, this series, without Tommy Goss. I'm telling you, like a producer, like a facilitator.
I'll take that. I'll take a facilitator.
And, you know, he gave me a place to stay. He's got a cottage here. I've got my own.
It's the Pine Grove Resort.
It's the old pool.
It's the pool house.
The pool house. It's a very nice pool house, by the way. Gotta say, uh-huh. I am the pool boy for the week, and it's a great
and
setup.
By the way, did you bring the garbage can back up from the street?
I'm gonna get to that, sir. I promise, and I will change your drum heads. But no, but seriously, I mean, we argue like Ginger and Jack all day long. I come and do interviews, and then I come out and I'm like, listen, you fucking, you know. Yeah. He screams at me. It's a beautiful relationship. Because you can hear Tommy's very ornery. You can tell.
I told you, man, I'm just a big fan of the show. Always love the show.
You. Thank you.
And how I found you was because of Victor. Only because I Googled Victor. I'm like, okay, who's this drummer coming in? And your podcast was the first thing that came up on the Google search. So I listened to that podcast.
I didn't even pay for that. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So I listened to that, and then I dug a deep hole, and then he gave me a sweatshirt at the end of the tour, and I hit that sweatshirt.
He did?
Yeah. That was my little tour gift. It was like a 2-week tour. It's not like, you know.
Victor gave you the hoodie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Interesting. That's it. And then I left it at a gig somewhere, and then I asked him for your number so I could get another one. And that's how we started, you know, our little contact.
Did I get you another one?
I showed up in California fucking banging on your door.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. No, that's okay. We went to Cafe 101.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Or 101 Cafe. I can't
and that was like therapy for me, too. I had just got split up and kind of, spent so many years in therapy. And I'm like, I'm going to go meet this fucking guy.
Yeah.
You know
this
what I mean?
Fucking guy.
Yeah, like.
And then you were like, this is him? This is Dave?
This is it?
It's totally like, what'd you expect, man? You know,
I was gonna go to John Cryer's table and sit with him.
That's right. We went to Cafe 101. I look up. It's like, hey, it's John Cryer, with a beard and a shaved head.
That's correct.
Ducky from Pretty in Pink.
That's right. That's right.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Ducky. I just had to make sure that was the right one. Pretty in Pink. Yeah. Yeah. With Dice Man. He says, but he's sitting with Dice Man at the club. Remember? Dice Man.
Oh.
Dice is the bouncer. He won't let Ducky in. John Cryer. Unreal, man. With that 2.5 men money.
Hell yeah.
Going to get pancakes and eggs, you know, just like the rest of us.
Hell yeah.
You're going to be doing some more stuff, though. I mean, this is going to be interesting because, and the tech thing, by the way, real quick, I mean, some do's and don'ts. I mean, have you worked with some idiots, like, or you've been pretty lucky as far as...
Super lucky that, I mean, always working with like a 4 or 5 piece kit, which I love. Like, yeah. I don't know if I'd be able to do a giant drum kit. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
I don't know if I'd want to.
We wouldn't work for Bozio, right, with that crap.
No.
Good luck.
No, I've been super lucky with that. And like I said, Aaron, Victor, both just, hey, do your thing.
Nicest guys, yeah.
Yeah, and even Aaron, there were a couple of drummers at a show one time, and they were like, oh my God, your drum sounded great out front. He just pointed to me. I was that guy there. I didn't touch him. You know what I mean? Like, totally just giving props. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is awesome. But, tech-wise, like this past summer, I really got into the TuneBot because the first drummer, the original drummer for Bush, he liked he used the drum dial and he had the numbers set to where he liked them. So I started fiddling with that and you always tune by ear, you know what I mean? And by feel. Like, because a drum just kind of has its own, it has its little sweet spot. And if you can find it, you know, I'm not that technical. Or I wasn't. So I did the drum dial thing. But then with Kretz, too, he tunes the top two rototoms. He's got two rototoms up top. It's like a C and a G or something like that. I have to look it up. It's in my notebook, which I have to refresh anyway because I got something coming up. And he used the TuneBot to get them to those notes. So then this past summer I did 6 weeks with Bush. And really got into it and started tuning. And I'm always like a fourth apart from the rack tom to the floor. I always, you know, just do the, you know, the Here Comes the Bride. Doom, 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 doom. But then I started just really finding the notes. I would tune it up myself, then use the TuneBot to see what I was close to, and then tweak it to there. You know what I mean? I tweak it to like a C, and I'm not like a guy, so I have to look it up. Okay, it was C, D, E, F, you know, so...
This episode is brought to you by Toomba.
Right. But for Nick Hughes, who's a great drummer in Bush right now, and the front of the house guy loved it, man. Loved it. He said, man, they're sounding great. And I came in to some other guy that, you know, they didn't like the way he tuned them. So, you know, the first day I came in, they were just like, oh, man, this is great. You know, just
right. Keep going.
But during that tour, you know, I just kind of tweaked my thing. It was fun. You know, it was actually fun. It's like when at your job, like at home here, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But when at your job, it's like, all right, you know, you want to hook this guy up.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Of course.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I love playing, but I love teching too, man. Because I started out as a stagehand. I love putting on a rock show. I love it.
Yeah.
I love, you know, I don't like lifting the gear anymore, but, you know.
Right.
You know, getting the gear in, setting up, sound check, boom, tearing it down. It's a thing.
And you're out by, you're on the bus.
Wow, for that tour, yeah. Bush was on first. So I was in the bus, you know.
It's beautiful, man.
I've been going to bed and the rest of the crew is like, come on, Tommy, come out, start partying. I'm like, I had my two beers, man. I'm good. I'm going to bed. See ya.
Love it. Wild, yeah. Man. Yeah, I love it. No, it's right on, man. I mean, it's the old man blue plate special. You know what I mean?
Hell yeah. All day long. All day long.
I love it, man. Tommy Goss, folks. I look him up on Instagram.
Goss Drum.
Goss Drum. Hit him up. Follow him.
Yeah.
Send him a little DM. Say thanks. Thank you, Tommy.
Yeah.
Thank you for helping to bring this show back.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Seriously.
I'm excited for you, buddy.
Seriously, this Nashville series, I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating. Like,
you're coming back? That's the question.
I'm coming back.
You're coming back.
If you'll have me, I'll come back. You know?
Pine Grove Resort's always there for
always, you. Always putting it out, and now I'm going to put it out for the Nashville people. You know, you find when Dave's coming back, and you deliver some weed, you know? I'm the Snoop Dogg of the drum podcast world. Yes.
Unfortunately, I have to, you know, enlist my son to
that's it. Exactly. To like that. For the Ramones, they had to go searching for Yoo-Hoo in South America. And here's Tommy Goss, like, going, all right, I got to get Dave from
my... I'm sorry. Dad. Maybe you can edit this in.
Go ahead.
But for the Ramones, for Dee Dee,
yeah.
When we go overseas to Europe or South America, we stuff two mic stands full of weed.
Ooh, good.
Because they would cart over, you know, we'd rent gear everywhere else, but the mic stands had to be the same, the wardrobe box, all that stuff. So we'd send over a box full of hardware, and we'd fill the mic stands full of weed so that as soon as we got there, Dee Dee would have some weed.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
So maybe we should just do that. I'll just ship it ahead. You know, someone was telling me, a shipping guy I knew, he told me, I forget which one it was. I think FedEx, he's like, it's the biggest drug dealer. In the world, like, everyone's just shipping it.
Wow.
You know, that's what I'll do. I'll ship you some microphones. You know what I mean? I'll be like, I need these mics for the podcast.
That's it.
In Nashville. You know what I mean? Fuck it. You know?
That was a good one. I forgot about that.
Dave Redmond.
Sorry.
We're going to get Rich. Rich, if you're here, we'll get you on the show. You're friends, brother.
Yes. My girlfriend and his girlfriend were friends, and so we met. He's a super nice guy, man. Really cool. And
yep.
Yeah, we had Easter brunch together.
Maybe Rich Redmond can get me some weed.
Maybe.
You never know. You never know. Listen, brother. Thank you. Thank you, my brother. Always a good time, man.
No, man. I'm glad you came. And thanks for having me. I mean, goddamn, this.
Come on, bro.
My evil plan worked. You know what I mean?
Listen, you got to listen. Put me up, folks. Fly me to Miami. Fly me to I don't know where else would people be in this country? I don't know.
Well, you're gonna go to New York, right?
Gotta go overseas. Well, New York, I'm from, but right. You know, but if you have an apartment overlooking Central Park and you want to put me up to do this New York series,
yeah.
I'm happy to take it. I'll take care of the weed in New York.
You can figure that out.
That I can figure out. That's not a problem. But, you know, just, and overseas, of course, like I was saying, anyone listening in London, Stockholm, Sweden is good.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the history of ABBA. I could do my
Amsterdam, perhaps.
Amsterdam, wherever. Yeah. Again, Barcelona would be good, but, you know, bring me over. Why not? Fly me to Paris.
Go, man, go.
Fly me to the moon. Go, man. Tommy Goss, folks, hit him up. Thank him. Shout outs to Tommy Goss online.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Good night. Good night, Gracie.